Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and we have a great show for you tonight, as well as the rest of the week. And I'm happy to be back, and I'm happy to have you back, my faithful, trusty listeners. Been getting lots of email about a new promo I did for the network. A lot of people recognize me in this. And so I want to thank everybody that enjoyed the music and my friend Julio. And if you listen to BBS Radio for any extended period of time, you'll hear some of these promos throughout the day. There's some pretty famous people in some of them, too, besides the ones that I did. But they're fun to do, and they remind you how important BBSRadio.com really is in your life. So I want to, again, thank all the listeners that responded and kind of enjoyed it, got a laugh out of it. That's what it's all about, having fun. Now, the rest of the week, before I introduce tonight's guest, we've got Lindsay Williams coming up tomorrow, Tuesday night. On Wednesday, I have the publishers of the Idaho Observer, Don Harkin and Ingrid Castle. They're, in a sense, my bosses when I'm writing a research piece for the newspaper. And I recommend that if you're interested in reading in real time the truth in a newspaper, by all means, subscribe to the Idaho Observer. You can go to my website, directlightproductions.com, and the contact information is And welcome back to Evident Footprints. As usual, some hanky-panky going on with the computers, and they decided they didn't want you to hear who the guests were this week. So I'm going to recap. Before I introduce tonight's guest, we've got Lindsay Williams talking about the non-energy crisis tomorrow evening. That's Tuesday. On Wednesday, my publishers, Don Harkins and Ingrid Castle from the Idaho Observer. And I was saying around the time I got cut off that if you're interested in reading the truth in a real newspaper, then by all means subscribe to the Idaho Observer. You can see their information on my website, directlightproductions.com. You can go to sponsors, and you will see a whole page dedicated to the Observer, how I came to meet them and what kind of people they are, and a little bit of information about annual subscriptions. Also, Thursday, we have Rick Nelson from the Paranormal Research Forum, and you don't want to miss that show if you're into ufology and contact with intelligent life. Very, very interesting show we're going to have for you. On Friday, the 29th, we have a special two-hour show. Now, we're starting at the regular time, 10 p.m. Pacific. The show will run 2 hours, and our special guest will be futurist, seer, remote viewer, and astrologer Michael St. Clair. You are definitely going to want to hear what he has to say. He's going to be forecasting things to come for planet Earth. And he's going to take us not only up to 2012, but way beyond. You definitely want to listen to that show. In fact, you want to listen to all of them, including the one that we have for you tonight. Now that we've lost a minute or two, we are going to regain that. We won't cheat you out of any of the show tonight, and I'm going to bring my usual Friday night guest on board tonight because of that special show that we could only book on Friday for Michael St. Clair. He was kind enough to relinquish that slot and move into Monday this week. He'll be back on Fridays starting next week. My good friend, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Don. As usual, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Good. I hope you didn't get bumped off the call as well.
No, actually what happened was you just vanished, and I decided the best thing to do is just wait and see what happens.
Very good. Well, it's amazing how this happens on the nights that you're on. I guess they're just wondering what we're going to talk about.
Well, so, maybe we're considered a dangerous combination. Who knows?
Oh, man. Okay, and they don't know that we belong to the Hell's Angels either, do they?
Right. A little.
Well, last week we were talking about quite a few things. I know we talked about the so-called satellite adventure. And, in fact, I was on a show, as the listeners may or may not know, with Len Horowitz and Reverend Roxy Hampton, and we talked about this event a week ago Sunday. It wasn't this past Sunday, but a week prior. And I think I mentioned that to you during the last show. And we are of the conclusion that they probably fired some sort of a particle beam weapon at this satellite. They obliterated it on the night of the total eclipse. So we were talking about that. And we went into a discussion about some photos that I had seen of Mars and the fact that photos that they show us of certain landing sites or certain craters seem to indicate that there is a little bit of obfuscation in the photos. And then when you see what is revealed after you look at the originals, then there's quite a bit going on up there, far different from what we are taught in our schools, far different from what the public is told. And we're going to talk about that tonight. And you got a chance to look at those pictures.
Yes, I did. And I found them to be very interesting indeed for a variety of reasons, frankly. And the gentleman who was doing the expose on the pictures has an enormous volume of information to relate. And I couldn't read it all, but everything I did read was very interesting and very profound and sounded very factual to me. Some of the pictures are just incredible when you look at them. I mean, I don't necessarily agree 100% with every conclusion that was presented, but I will tell you this. The photographs are so unusual and represent such an alien terrain that even if they didn't have exceptionally interesting features hidden within them, they would still be worth looking at. You know what I mean, Don?
Mm-hmm.
But the
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The thing that there was a few things that really grabbed my attention. The two things in particular that I spent probably most of the time on was the evidence of large bodies of water on Mars, and the fact that there are vast areas which are forested. And frankly, that kind of blew my mind because even when I was younger and totally enamored with the mysteries of Mars, I always figured that the green areas were a lower form of vegetation. And I imagined it to be something like grass or lichen or, you know, little shrubs.
Sagebrush, maybe. Yeah.
But this guy goes into great detail about the fact that it's got some kind of very large trees. And he gets to this conclusion by comparing aerial photographs taken from a similar height of Earth forest with the areas that he is recognizing as forest on Mars, and the similarity is just awesome. And also you can see there are several instances, for instance, where the forest comes to the edge of a lake or the edge of a body of water, and the vegetation or whatever it is becomes much more pronounced at these lines of demarcation, just like it would on Earth. You know, you see the beach or whatever you want to call it of the edge of the lake, and then the continuation of the vegetation. It's very striking. And of course, the most interesting thing about the presence of such large volumes of water, as we all know, water is the principal ingredient necessary for life as we know it.
Probably throughout the universe, right?
Oh, I would definitely say so. Well, you know, it's very interesting. Everybody seems to miss the boat when it comes to that. I've often wondered how it's possible that our scientists can look at spectral evidence from distant stars, and they recognize that the same elements are present. They already know that the star systems have planets that orbit around them, and they're located at different distances from those stars. And so we have physically similar properties in distant solar systems. We have the same elements in distant solar systems, but for some reason they can't make the jump or don't want to make the jump to conclude that there should probably be water there and there should probably be life. Why should life be restricted only to our neck of the woods, so to speak? If that were actually true, then we'd be freaks. Because
we are, anyway.
I was going to say, not to say there aren't any freaks here, but, you know, the odds are actually easier to accept that 50% of all the known planets in the galaxy are populated with some form of life than it is to say that we are the only ones.
Well, you know, they talk about, if we were to find out that it would make us go crazy, we would go insane or we would panic because it would shatter our belief system. Well, excuse me, folks. You've created this mind control paradigm matrix. And that you only want us to know what you want us to know so you can control us. That's quite obvious what the plan is and what the methods are. So for us to find out accidentally or somehow by their motives to let us know a little tidbit of information because we're seeing so many craft around or because so many people are being abducted or contacted and inspired to raise their consciousness a bit, that somehow they will lose control of this whole apparatus that they have here on the planet. And that's their fear, is that we will find out what's really going on, either through waking up ourselves or having someone here with overwhelming evidence that life exists elsewhere. It will shatter this prison planet, if you want to call it that. So that's the real motive in not telling us. But don't insult us. You know, it's bad enough that you think we're all stupid enough to become slaves, let alone insult our intelligence about our knowledge about the rest of the universe. And I'm sure you feel the same way.
Well, I do. As a matter of fact, I've felt that way all my life. I remember having discussions of this sort with my dad when I was very young, and I couldn't imagine that there wasn't life elsewhere in the universe. And what's interesting, I'm not what you would call a very religious person,
mm-hmm.
but I did grow up in a staunchly Catholic family, and my dad read the Bible every night after dinner to the family, and some of the passages that I recall the best actually pertain to some of the more unusual aspects of Christ's potential teachings. I remember, for instance, one instance where he says, in the house of the Father there are many mansions. And I don't know how other people interpret that, but I always looked at it that if God dwells in the entire universe, then the mansions that are referred to are essentially the planets or the worlds that are created. And if those worlds were created for similar purposes to our own world, then it stands to reason that a good number of them may have other forms of life upon them. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
That could have been galaxies and solar systems, too.
Absolutely. It's all different octaves of the same concept.
You know, they've sold us this bill of goods for so long that many people have, I mean, they're totally brainwashed into thinking that there is no life anywhere else. Of course, we're teased with this possibility while they carry on their covert space program, and then they're telling us, you know, well, someday we might get lucky and by chance discover that there might be a planet that has the potential for life. They don't acknowledge what's really going on whatsoever. They even, you know, they want us to doubt that even exists, that there might be air on another planet, as if God or the Creator in His magnificence forgot to put life elsewhere, forgot to create clouds and seas and plants and animals. Come on, give me a break. You know, I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Well, it is, and one thing that's very interesting, which I came across only recently, and I have to be honest with you, Don, I don't remember where I read this, but it blew my mind, and when I find out what the source is, I will share it with you. But what it pertains to is do you remember the probe that we sent off into deep space a number of years ago? And on there was a gold plate that had... Pardon me?
It had Michael Jackson on it. I remember there was a Michael Jackson song. And
I don't remember what all was on there, but essentially it had a description of what we were like, what we were made of, what planet we are in, and what star system, and you know, the fact that our species has male and female,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, basic information like that. And I always thought that was a pretty fantastic idea to send that thing off, and it's like casting a bottle with a note in it into the ocean, you know. Well, what most people don't know about, myself included until very recently, was that apparently an answer was received from that information quite recently. And what was interesting about it is the people who answered that had very similar makeup and similar information to share with us. And one thing that was really very, very intriguing, we had said to them that we are a carbon-based species. And when they answered back, they said that they are a carbon-silicon-based species. And at first you would think, oh, well, that means that they're they're slightly different in construction. But this article that I read went on to clarify the fact that even though we refer to ourselves as carbon-based, we actually have more silicon in our structures than is normally talked about. And so actually we too are carbon-silicon compositions. And it's very interesting that that they would send back a reply a little bit more accurate than the one that we sent them. And it's even more amazing that this never got into the public consciousness, that there was actually an answer to the bottle we sent adrift in space. I think that's pretty profound.
Yeah, that would be the end of this paradigm I was talking about. And then of course, they would have to modify it again and say we are carbon, silicon, and pharmaceutical-based. So, you know, it would just be one-upping each other, you know, until the whole truth comes out. There's a lot of truth in that, even though I'm joking, you know. Okay, let's go back to these Mars pictures, if we could, for a moment, unless there's something more that you wanted to add to that, because...
No, I don't have any problem staying with the pictures. I have a lot more to say about it, actually. One of the things that was very striking, too, on these Mars pictures, which was very well documented, was the fact that there apparently are floods or have been floods on Mars. There's enormous evidence of water erosion. And they showed one crater in particular, or a canyon, that had every evidence of a huge waterfall. And at the bottom of it, there was still water in the receiving pool. So, the fact that there's a great deal of water on Mars still, and obviously there was more water in the past, is pretty exciting because I would venture to say that where there's water, there's life. And one of the things that was very interesting, too, was that there apparently are seasonal floods, or maybe floods isn't the right word. Let's call it moistening or water flows that ensue from the melting of the ice caps. When the ice melts as the summer months begin to make their presence felt on Mars, apparently the water from the ice caps flows down towards the equatorial regions and the vegetation flourishes. There were even some pictures, Don, which were really interesting because they showed the forest and they showed lakes in the forests and they actually showed streams and you could see them. Of course, they may have been much bigger than streams, but from that altitude, they look like small streams or rivulets that connect the lake system together. And I found that pretty profound. There were also pictures of the South Pole of Mars, and apparently there's a very striking anomaly at the South Pole, which... consists of a huge circular depression in the ice cap, which is so perfectly round that you'd have trouble believing that it was artificial. I mean, that it wasn't artificial. And in the middle of this circular depression, there was a dome-shaped object. And, of course, I don't have any clue what it is, but you know, considering how big it has to be in order to be seen from such a high-altitude photograph, and considering further where it's placed, the thought that crossed my mind was that it might be a receiving reservoir for some of this melting ice and a pumping station that would be sending water off to some distant area. And then the reason why that's of significance in this conversation is because they also show what they call several Martian megacities, huge city-like structures, which have been attempted to be masked or hidden by photographic touch-up, but which become very clearly evident when they remove the upper layers of this cover-up that they put on top of the film. And if these, in fact, are cities of great size, located in areas which are away from the forests, but out in the semi-desert areas, then by all means, they would have to have a very generous water supply. Mm-hmm. And so that just, I thought that was very striking, that idea that, I mean, we do it here. We have large pipelines that supply cities with water, so why wouldn't you do it on Mars, whoever's up there?
We've had pictures, Jim, I can remember from, you know, I would think it was childhood when I saw pictures of Mars, and they would say, these are the polar ice caps, right? Well, they always refer to polar ice caps. What is ice made of? I mean, from what does ice come from?
Well, usually it comes from water, but, you know, I do know enough chemistry to know that there are other forms of ice, and that word is used with a great deal of poetic license, if you will, because technically it's not ice, it's frozen material of other types.
Okay.
Like methane and some of those other gases can also freeze and make a frost-like appearance, so can carbon dioxide. But
mm-hmm.
the point is that when that is warmed up, it sublimates into a gas. It does not flow nourish plant life. It just disappears.
Okay.
So when they say ice or polar ice caps, I'm assuming, just like you did, that the original people who looked at it were assuming that it was water in the form of ice.
Now, last summer, I got to see some pictures. I think I told you about these pictures, too. When I zoomed in, first of all, the picture looked like a large body of water, but it seemed to look like a very large river. And there were banks on each side, of course, which most rivers would have, at least on this planet. And when I zoomed in on the photo, I began seeing other anomalies. I saw tall buildings along the banks, which looked like skyscrapers. And I saw a very large ship in the water. Now, I would presume it was water. It was very blue in color. This picture was not filtered, although it was taken from such an altitude that you had to zoom in to see the smaller details. And when you did zoom in on this, the picture began to pixelate. And so it became fuzzier because as you were zooming in, these pixels began to look like little boxes. Anyone who's played around with a JPEG or a TIFF file or a GIF file in a zoom function notices that you can only go so close up before the picture starts to become distorted. Now, there are various kinds of software to minimize that, but you can't really overcome it completely unless you have a camera, if you're using a camera that has a very high rate of pixelation in the original photograph, then you can zoom in and you can create much larger files. It would be like having a file that's maybe 100K, 100,000 bytes, as opposed to maybe 2 megabytes or 3 megabytes, and you're going to get a lot more definition in that picture. So it the original focal point of the lens limited how much you could zoom in on the picture, but it was very obvious that the visions that I had had, let's say from the astral realm, were substantiated by those photographs, including vegetation and the supposition that there was life there. It's obvious that that's a living society right now, that's not a ruins, that there is cultivation of the soil going on, that there is massive community development, infrastructure, roads, buildings. What it's difficult to tell if it's a type of housing or commerce of some sort, but then we have the glass tubes that appear in some of the more ancient pictures. There are recent pictures in this collection of what appear to be beings as well, bipeds, one the size of maybe a Sasquatch or a Yeti, if you want to call it that, and some smaller images of people. One looks like it's lying on a rock, has no hair on the head. There are some pretty crazy pictures on this website, but explanations to it. So the things that I have been saying for years are coming out in these photographs, and it matches what Billy Meyer has said to a great extent. Pictures of which for years Wendell Stevens has been publishing and speaking about at conferences and seminars on film, where he's shown these pictures similar to these or some from space, pictures of vehicles sort of parked out in space. I'm sure you've either seen or heard about some of those yourself.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you had sent me some. A few months ago.
Yeah, I did, didn't I? Somewhere like around the summertime, wasn't it?
Yeah. And one other thing that was really interesting, because it was from a completely different perspective. The guy in his collection of pictures shows photographs of the ground taken by the Land Rover that we landed on Mars, one of the ones that survived the trip and stayed active. And there is one picture in particular which is so interesting, because it shows a depression in the soil, which in itself already looks as if it was made by a vehicle that had gone by. I wouldn't say that it was like a tire track, but you know, something similar to that. Mm-hmm. And laying in the middle of this depression is a coin. I mean, if it isn't a coin, I don't know what it is, but it definitely looks like a coin. And in the picture, you can even see the little ridge of metal that usually is on the outermost portion of a coin, you know, at the limits of its stamping, that gives a little bit of extra strength to the finished piece. And just thought that was pretty amazing, that there would be our own Land Rover picked that up on, probably inadvertently. I doubt if the Land Rover brought any money with it. So,
well, maybe it was a coin operated Land Rover.
Maybe it's coin operated. You have to put the quarter in every few minutes, you know, to keep it going.
Was it you that I was discussing this? You know, this was on a prior show some months ago. I think we discussed some anomalies that were occurring with the dirty lenses on the rovers. And then,
oh yeah, and we touched on that recently. Also, as a matter of fact, we made the joke about you know, sending up astronauts with a box of Kleenex to clean the lenses.
Yeah. Do you want to share what you know about that, or
Well, actually, I don't know anything, you know, in depth about it, except for the fact that, you know, glass that is coated with dust from, let's say, a windstorm or whatever other possible sources there might be, is not going to clean itself. And I think it's very interesting that, as we had discussed on that particular show, that the viewing of the terrain became obscured, supposedly by this dust, and then miraculously, a short time later, the cameras were working just fine, and it just makes you wonder what's the real story, because it's very clear that somebody had to clean the lenses.
Well, it could have been caused by a leaf blower, too, originally, and they made the guy go back and clean up the mess he left. You know, it's obvious.
It was probably one of those large Sasquatch creatures was blowing leaves around.
Yeah. they try to cover up the fact, first of all, you know, the filtered pictures that we see are not realistic. I think we agree on that wholeheartedly, that they touch these up, whether it's airbrushing or if it's just altering the digital images with these layers, and the way you peel them off is you figure out how they've masked the picture, basically. It's
right.
Like putting on a mask. And they can superimpose another layer or two or three, as many as they need. But they leave enough there that you can, they can go back and find, particularly what they're looking at, or it's just a sloppy job. Now, maybe on the average computer, it doesn't show up. I can tell you on a computer with a very high resolution screen, one that, let's say that instead of using hundreds of colors is using millions of colors, you get much, much clearer detail, and you don't get the usual distortion that you would get on a lesser quality screen. And you can see where these marks are underneath. It was the same thing here on Earth when we talked about this this picture that I still haven't put up on my site, by the way, and that's this 50-mile-long object that landed in Greenland. And it looks
it
was shot down.
Yeah, I was really, really interested in finding out about that. I thought, you say it landed or was buried under the ice, which?
Well, it's lying on the ground, and it's partially covered with snow and ice. And one would, because it has this burn mark on it, I would venture to say that it was shot down at some point, and it landed on the Earth. And it happened to land in Greenland. The thing is 50 miles long, or darn close. Something like 49.2 miles. That's close to 50 miles long. When you're looking at this on a picture, where it's, you see the whole of the object that's protruding from the snow and the ice, it doesn't look like it's 50 miles until you realize from what a distance this picture has been taken from. This object is absolutely huge.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. Is there any evidence that this has recently arrived, or is it more realistic to assume that it's been there under the ice, and now that the ice caps are retreating, that it suddenly becomes more obvious?
Greenland, you know, I don't know enough about the meteorology and the topography of the country, other than to say this whole area is nothing but ice or ice and snow. I would presume that they get snow up there, and that this could have been covered under massive sheets of snow and ice, or that it fell with such a force that it partially buried itself. What was startling is that when I first looked at some of the pictures that were released, they had tried to mask out the pictures just like the ones masked out on Mars, the ones that we're referring to where the cities are. And we're looking at the long shots, and there's an arrow there that shows where this anomaly is occurring on Mars. When you look at the original pictures that were released of this thing where they're trying to cover up the fact that it's lying there, you can see a fuzzy ghost of a pattern underneath, and when you see the real picture, you say, yeah, that's what I saw. Only now you see the color instead of being a dark, obfuscated kind of a dark gray or a light black color, if there is such a thing. You know, a little bit of white in it, and cloud cover intended to make it look like you can't see any, you know, like there's nothing there. If you study the picture, you can see it's there. Now, when I saw the picture of it revealed, not masked, it's in exactly the same position that I saw this ghostly image of it. So you can tell that they released pictures and tried to mask it out, and somebody got a hold of that and took the filtration off the top layer, and voila, you see the picture. You see the whole object, and it's a rusty orange color, and it has several burn marks on it as if it was shot with a laser weapon or a particle beam weapon. Definitely suffered some damage. Definitely crashed down there. Now, you're asking me for a time when this happened, and I haven't really looked at that, you know, from a metaphysical perspective. Maybe I should. But the reason we're even talking about that is we have these types of anomalies on our planet, and they try to cover it up, and it's been revealed. I think Filer's Files, George Filer actually had that published. Now, we're seeing the same thing being done with the pictures on Mars. And look what it reveals. And they're feeding this line to us that, you know, we hope some, you know, in our lifetime we might get a message back. We might pick up some radio waves. Come on, wake up, folks. You know, there's a hell of a lot more than that going on out in space. I mean,
yeah, it would certainly seem that way.
All the sightings there are, all the technology we have, where are we getting this technology from? How is it that people that can't even run their own planet and take care of their own planet can master traveling through space millions of miles away? We can't fix our streets. We can't fix our schools. We can't provide our people with clean water, and they're spending trillions of dollars going into outer space. There's something wrong with that picture. And why are they spending that money, and why are they going out there? What is it that's so important out there that they can't take care of first down here? I mean, if we start looking at this from a political perspective, it smells very corrupt, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and when you see pictures of cities on Mars, don't tell me there might be life somewhere in the universe. There's life, teeming life, right in our own solar system. And Mars is not the only planet. Wait till I get talking about Venus and Saturn and, you know, I will. I'll start talking about and the moon as well. There's plenty of action going on up on the moon. Now, is it as livable? That's questionable. You can put somebody in a spacesuit and have them walk around Earth, and you can cause people to believe there's no more air just because they're wearing a spacesuit. You know, you can put a spacesuit in any environment, is what I'm saying. So that because the person, we think that you have to have a spacesuit on so you can breathe. You know, the air quality on the planet right now might cause us to have to start wearing spacesuits just to stay alive. You know, it astounds me how we don't think this through and realize that we're being hoodwinked. It's so obvious. And these pictures on MarsAnomalyResearch.com website reveal. I mean, he's got, what, hundreds of pictures, if not thousands? Definitely hundreds of pictures.
Yeah, there's definitely hundreds. I didn't count them, of course, but it's surprising how many are there. But the thing that gets me, Don, is even if we allow for the possibility, as far out as it may seem, that in our most recent cycle of technical development, we have had the capability of deep space travel for, I don't know, pick a number, 75, 80 years. And I'm exaggerating because I really don't know. It's not enough time, considering all of the evidence in these photographs of these big cities, especially the ones that he refers to as the mega cities, which are huge. There's not enough time to have built all of that with crews that are ferried, you know, from Earth. So whatever's going on up there has either got to be a joint venture between other beings and Earth people, or else there was already a pretty amazing civilization there, and somehow we are getting our foot in the door. I'm not sure how to interpret that.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to the photographs, there are a few more things that he has pictures of which are really pretty amazing. One of them is that in the area below the poles where this water leaks down with the coming of spring, there's pictures there of vast swamplands, which certainly would make sense because if it's close enough to the pole that it's getting leakage on a general basis, it's probably more moist than the areas closer to the equator, and it stands to reason that it would be swampy. Then, of course, when the springtime comes and the so-called flooding occurs, that area may well be inundated and submerged until the drier period arrives. But the pictures of the swampland is very, very obvious what it is. Mm-hmm. And in New Jersey, where I grew up, as you well know, there are enormous quantities of swampland. And as a kid, I did a lot of exploring in those regions. And I can tell you that when you look at these aerial photographs, it could be the Jersey Meadowlands, for goodness sake. I mean, it's really very obvious that it's swamp. And,
so what you're saying is that if you're in New Jersey, you feel like you're on Mars, or?
Well, there's certain areas of New Jersey that definitely contain alien life forms. So I will definitely give you that. I think most of them are in Trenton.
Okay.
Which is the state capital. But anyway, getting back to the pictures, the other thing, there are two other things which I thought were really very impressive, and that is that there's photographs of geysers going off on Mars, something like Old Faithful, but apparently much, much larger. And what's interesting is that the pictures are clear enough that you can not only see the plume of heated water coming out of the ground, but you can actually see the shadow on the ground cast by, the sun working, not being able to penetrate this this explosion of water. And I thought that was pretty impressive, to be honest with you. It probably is a geyser. If it was something more volcanic in nature, I don't think you'd have the same effect. And it does look like a geyser. You have to take a look at it to see. But it's a pretty amazing picture. And the other thing that was quite surprising is several pretty good pictures of cloud formations. And one in particular where it's apparently raining on one of the cities. And I thought that that was pretty extraordinary. There again, it takes you back to the idea of there being copious amounts of water on Mars. And we all know what that infers. So I think it's really amazing that that they have all these hundreds of photographs, and they obviously have great meaning. It's just a shame that they don't come right out and share it with us. I realize, of course, that they won't do that, but it's just such an amazing trip to consider that our nearest celestial neighbor has so much going on up there, and most people just think it's a vacant desert, and there's no reason to go there.
Sure. Now, Jim, we've been taught, and I hear this a lot from time to time still, and if you think it through, it doesn't make sense at all. And that's a planet's relationship to the sun. In other words, its distance from the sun determines or has much to do with what its surface temperature is. It, in other words, its ability to support life. Why is it that some of the planets that are so far away from the sun are told to have incredibly high temperatures? I think I remember hearing something that Venus has a surface temperature of 700 degrees, which I don't buy whatsoever. It's probably 70 degrees. And they're just saying it's 700 degrees just to, as if we're going to get in a plane and or in a rocket and fly up there on our own. It just doesn't make sense. Or that a planet like what's the nickname for Jupiter? They call it something like the fiery planet or something because of all of these massive electrical storms and flashes of light that have been going on for centuries, at least in modern recorded history, and I use that word with reservation, recorded.
Yeah.
How is it that its distance from the sun allows that to occur? I would think that quite possibly that the planets have sort of their own internal power system. It might be like a nuclear reactor. For instance, the Earth might be like that. Metaphysics teaches that it's very alive.
I can touch a little bit on that subject for you because of my interest in Egyptology, believe it or not.
Okay.
One of the things that's quite fascinating, as you know, The ancient Egyptians buried most of their royal families in the Valley of the Kings, not in pyramids, which, of course, is another deliberate misleading. But in these Valley of the Kings, the tombs are hewn from solid rock, and some of them go down incredible distances. And some of them branch out into all sorts of different chambers and what have you. And these are all ornately painted with hieroglyphs and symbols and various representations of the afterlife or scenes from the lives of these people who are buried there.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that we are told that these were painted with primitive oil lamps for illumination. And yet, there has never been any complaint or any finding anywhere of soot deposits on the ceilings of these tombs, which would have obscured some of the beautiful artwork. And so the next great explanation has been, oh, well, maybe they used mirrors and reflected sunlight down through these corridors to illuminate these rooms. But if you listen to what people like Tesla and others who have investigated this phenomenon have to say, it's really a much more interesting and more valuable solution. What they say, of course, is that certain rays which emanate from our sun, when they actually impinge upon the atmosphere of the Earth, it is there that the light and heat are created. And the reason why this is interesting is because there's a great deal to support this idea, because when you go out in space, as the astronauts have done, there's no light and heat out there. It's pitch dark, and the sun appears as a very distant spot of bright light. But until it actually hits the atmosphere of some planet, you don't have this local warming and illumination phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very possible that there's truth in what they say about the ancients, that they had the secret of creating daylight, which would mean that with the proper ray or the proper electrical facility, that they could illuminate these tombs, not with light bulbs like we do today, but by creating an excitation in the oxygen molecules that would allow light to manifest, just like it does at sunrise.
Could have been done with a crystal, for example, right?
Many, many different possible solutions. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because the ancients also talk about the fact that the Earth is surrounded by a vortex which acts like a lens.
Mm-hmm.
And if our planet has this vortex, then so do other planets. And it could very well be that between the focusing action of this vortexial lens and the amount of these rays that are received and the constitution of the local atmosphere, that the temperatures and the lighting that would be available might not be anything like we think they are. And it might look entirely different on the surface of that world than it looks to us viewing it from the distance.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't think we're in the position to be too dogmatic about this stuff. There's a lot more that we don't know than there is that we do know. So I think a little humility might be a good idea in these cases.
Yeah, you mentioned the feasibility of building such a community. Let's suppose that my intuition tells me that somewhere circa the first couple of years in the 1960s, let's say 62, I've always said 1962. Recently, a couple of people have come out and said 1961, and they base this on their actual participation in this process. So we've had a good 45 years, at least, maybe 46 years, if 1961 is the true date, to be up there building cities. And look at the deterioration of our own infrastructure during this, you know, this period, same period of time. Our streets, our bridges, yeah, we've put up skyscrapers, but they can take them down with airplanes in a matter of minutes. They spend years building them, and they take them down within the span of an hour, and actually cause them to fall in a matter of seconds. So these scientific proclamations that they make, and the actual feat of achieving that, it's not like they've been really taking care of this planet. They have been focusing the big bucks in another direction, definitely into the space program. And if you add to that the strong possibility that these innovations and the technological advancements were a result of communication with higher intelligence from other parts of the universe, and I'm talking about what they would call extraterrestrial biological entities or beings from other planets that gave them, for whatever purpose, a certain amount of information and technology and the know-how and how to travel, it could be done in a very short amount of time. They could be making these trips up there nonstop. And these things, they tell us, well, we've calculated it would take 9 months to get there. They can get there in less than 9 minutes. And they might be able to get there in less than 9 seconds. If you
well,
take
I'm not debating any of that, Don. I'm just saying that I would feel a little bit more comfortable in believing that if there are so many cities up there, and believe me, they show more than one. There are several of these so-called mega cities out in the desert area. Then in the area called the Rift, there are a whole bunch of smaller cities, and then there are cities spread out along rivers and lakes on the shoreline. So my feeling is maybe some of this stuff was already there.
Oh yeah, I'm not disputing that. What the main point I'm trying to make, and I don't intend to sound like I'm arguing with your analysis. What I am saying is that possibility goes far beyond what we imagine because we base what we understand on what we see happening here.
Right.
Well, think where we would be if they would fix everything in this society. You know, you drive down the roads and you see potholes. They used to be able to make roads last at least 30 years. You're lucky if you can go 30 days without another pothole popping up on a brand new highway. In the middle of the summer, it doesn't even have to be cold weather. You know, and these explanations they give us for why potholes appear. Now, why am I talking about potholes? That's the most basic, fundamental type of construction. You know, using asphalt or concrete. There's nothing real super advanced about that, and they can't seem to get it down. They have to perpetuate the repair and the replacement and the repair and the replacement. And yet you see something like this, that there's a whole society existing up there. If it's not us, why is it such a problem to tell us that it's there when they find out? You see, everything points to the conspiracy and the concealment and the deception about what the real realities are and what they would have us believe. So I'm just pointing this out that we know about wormholes, we know about these energy vortexes that they like to call stargates. They're nothing but portals, but they're means through which to maybe violate what we understand as our physics, and that right in our face, there's other applications of the same physics, which would enable them to make these trips nonstop. So I'm merely pointing that out, that it's obvious they haven't been putting the money into this planet. And then you have to question, why is it that they're not? You know, why do they have to enslave this planet and they're going elsewhere and doing this? Even if
well,
it's just a look.
The thing that makes me wonder the most is, I can understand everything you're saying, but if all of this is up there, it also seems to insinuate that there's other previous occupants there as well. And that leads me to say, well, what kind of collaboration is going on between our people and theirs? And what is it for?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's an interesting question.
Well, yeah, that could be exactly what's going on, just as much as what I said could be exactly what's going on, or both scenarios could be taking place.
I just wish we had some answers.
Well, talking about it at least clarifies it, and I guess, you know, the purpose of the show is to bring information to people and to have people awaken, and we're talking about a very controversial topic, and I'm sure there's some listeners out there thinking to themselves, what the heck are these guys talking about tonight? Somebody who tuned in a couple of minutes too late, you know, we're talking about Mars. We're talking about a website called MarsAnomalyResearch.com that is just replete with photographic evidence of life on Mars. And not the little green man story that they like to make you look like you're some kind of wacko with. These are real photographs that have been examined forensically and dismantled, having the veils taken off of the pictures so that we can really see what was photographed and what's up there or down there, depending on which way you're turned, I guess, right? Out there.
Out, yeah, that's a good...
Or in there. it's all relative, right?
Well, it is. And don't forget, too, that we don't know how ancient the history of Mars may be. I mean, our own planet is incredibly old, and there have been civilizations here before that have come and gone. And the same sort of thing may have happened on Mars as well. And the reason I bring that up is because there are also quite a few photographs of what appear to be ruins on Mars. Huge faces with humanoid characteristics that have been carved on various natural rock structures and other not-so-clear objects like pyramid structures and domes that look like they are falling apart. So, you know, it's very possible that whatever's going on there now is much different from the first colonization effort, which may have been thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So just like our own planet, I mean, we have here... civilizations that are gone, like Egypt and Tiwanaku and all of those different things.
Mm-hmm.
They may have a similar situation up there.
Well, we have artifacts in Greece and Rome too that, you know, are not quite as old. But it makes you wonder. Okay, is it the same people that have moved beyond an older civilization, or is it someone that is leaving that there for posterity's sake? And why is it that those ancient ruins are so covered up by NASA? And obviously they don't want us to know that there ever was life up there, because they would have to acknowledge that. That would be the simplest reason. Or to imply that there is, or at one time, life up there, the possibility of life on another planet in our solar system blows all of the mind control basis, the foundation, out of the water on this planet. Again, it comes back to the same thing, that they don't want us to become conscious or more intelligent, or aware of other things, higher things, things that would empower us, because that would be our escape from a feudal system, from a slavery or a prison planet, as some like to call it.
Yeah, exactly.
I see, when I think about that, and you had mentioned that, I was going to actually bring that up. Yes, we have the pyramids. It's also, it raises the question, is it the same society that built those structures up there and came down here and built those structures down here, like the pyramids and the Sphinx and the Taj Mahal? And, you know, we have pyramids throughout the planet, but, the Parthenon and these big stadiums. It's funny how much the stadium in Rome and these amphitheaters look like the structures on Mars.
Well, another thing that's interesting, which I always was fascinated by, the ancient Arabic name for Cairo. I don't remember what that word is, but it translates to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you read a lot of the ancient stuff pertaining to Atlantis and Lemuria and all of those different bygone civilizations, they openly discussed the fact that there was interplanetary commerce in those days, and one of the heavens that was visited frequently was Mars. So,
and Mars was the god of war in Greek mythology, was he not?
Yes, in Greek mythology.
Yes. So we have these myths, as they like to call them, in our ancient history, and yet some very prolific writers were right on the money about the planet. I don't think we were the first ones to discover Mars. They well could see it in those days, and they had means, and maybe had just as good or even better technology to see those things. And those things were suppressed, most likely. It wasn't that they had fallen by the wayside. It was that they were secreted away someplace.
Well, like don't forget, lots of things have been suppressed that we do know about, and it just is a demonstration of a larger tendency. For instance, when Galileo was working on his telescope to look at these planets years and years ago, he was chastised openly and threatened by the Catholic Church, because what he was inferring with his learning was that the church was in error in their teachings concerning the fact that that the sun went around the earth and the earth was the only planet and all of this kind of stuff. So I think it's just another octave of the same behavior.
Yeah.
Hello?
Well, Jim, we are out of time. Unfortunately, that time happens every time you're on the show. And we're at the beginning of the week, so it's going to be almost 2 weeks till we get to talk to you again, because we got the rest of this week, and you're on again the following Friday, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we'll have plenty of time to look into this, I'm sure, a bit more. And we may be finding out some more things in the next couple of weeks. I think if you have a chance at all to listen to our show this coming Friday, you are going to want to hear what Michael St. Clair has to say. We're going to be talking about the influence of some of the planets, but in a astrophysics type of way. And Michael's work is being recognized around the world. His new book is being translated into a number of foreign languages. And he's getting rave reviews. Of course, he's being consulted by governments at this time because of the accuracy of some of his predictions and the things he's come to understand on a very high level. So he and I may be talking about this topic, and I know sometimes it's difficult for you to listen late at night because, you're working early in the morning, but if you have a chance, I'd like for you to be able to hear that, and if need be, I'll try to get you the audio archive so you can hear what he has to say. It'll be a two-hour show. Anyway, we're going to miss
you. Yeah,
I'll
look forward to it, though.
Yeah, we'll miss you for the next 2 weeks, but I encourage all the listeners to tune in. Jim Murray will be back 2 weeks from today, and that will be on the 7th of March. That's an interesting day. Isn't that the Ides of March?
Yeah, I think it is.
Whoa, okay. So... Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, this evening is none other than Jim Murray, and he'll be back March 7th. We got a commitment from him. Thanks for tuning in. In the meantime, go visit that site, MarsAnomalyResearch.com, or my website, DirectLightProductions.com, and BBSRadio.com. There's lots to do in all three places. And in the meantime, we'll see you tomorrow night, same time, same place. In the meantime, peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
You're listening to BBS Radio. An internet radio experience of truth, harmony, beauty. From your family at BBS Radio, have yourself a beautiful day.
Org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.